I'm going to ask Mike and Caroline to join us, to join me at the front. And what we like to do is we like to find out about you, and we like to hear what God's done in your lives and is doing in your lives, and get a rough idea of what he still needs to do in your lives.
Yes, sure.
And I remember talking to you, we first met in Australia in November 2010, I believe. And I remember you've got very different journeys to faith. I think we'll start with the one who started on the outside. So Caroline, tell us how it happened for you.
So I grew up in England. I grew up in Hertfordshire, and I was normal kind of, middle class kind of upbringing. And I think I was always quite empathetic as a kid, I was sort of interested in religious-y things, and I was back in the generation where parents dropped children off at Sunday school and then came and picked them up later or let them walk home. So I did go to a Sunday school for a short time when I was little, and the Sunday school taught Jesus was a great man and a great teacher, be like Jesus, and that was kind of the end of it. So I got to obviously to about the age of 10 and said, I don't need to go anymore, I get it. I get what they're saying. I understand he's a good man. I should be like Jesus and stuff. So I didn't really go anymore. And I think that gave me a false understanding of what Christianity was, because I think I assumed, therefore, that I knew what it was all about. And that kind of let me loose to go and explore all the other religions. So I studied Buddhism for 2 years, Islam for a year, Baha'ism, mysticism. And as I was studying these, I was doing politics and theology at uni. Then I go and travel to the place to see if it worked, you know. So I'd go to the Middle East and think, okay, let's see, does Islam work? And at different points I was convinced and then unconvinced and things. And so, I didn't obviously commit long term.
You were quite thorough. You really looked into it.
This is a program.
It was, it was. And Baha'ism, and I went to Haifa, and I covered a lot of ground in that sense. But I didn't ever look at Christianity again, apart from some of the German theologians who I thought, like Hegel and ones that aren't,
ones
more philosophy theologians. Didn't really go back to Christianity. And so even though I did study theology as my minor at university, I never opened a Bible the whole time because there was no need on the course, on the electives that I took. And then at age 25, I got offered two quite good jobs in Australia. And without really thinking, I didn't ever really particularly want to go to Australia, but then it was just, which job should I take? it wasn't a thought through thing. I had a nice job in London. I had a nice flat in Chiswick, and I was working 3 or 4 days in London and 1 and 2 days in the southwest, and it was really very nice. But then all of a sudden I was in Sydney, and then 3 months later I was a Christian. And
come to Sydney, it's great.
I was working in legal recruitment, which I think isn't a notoriously Christian profession.
It's what we call headhunting.
And you're out with clients a lot, and I really enjoyed it. You're out drinking and going to lots of balls, and you're out every night, really. I was starting to see that there wasn't all that much to it, really. One Friday night I'd been out drinking with clients, and I was hungover all day Saturday and all day Sunday, and I was living on the water and it was beautiful, and I was thinking, you're such an idiot. And it got to Sunday night and my flatmate was going back to the pub again, and I didn't want to go back to the pub, and so I thought, well, what else is open on a Sunday night? A church will be open. So I went to the church, and that Sunday they were signing people up for a weekend away. The following weekend, church weekend away, it was in the Blue Mountains. And I'd never been to the Blue Mountains before. I thought, fresh air, bushwalks, clean people, no alcohol. And that was exactly how I was feeling, that I needed that the next weekend. So I signed up for it. But I was new to Australia, everything was
very
new.
Very impressive, you know? Not very English. I mean, we English tend to be a little bit recalcitrant about getting to know new people, don't we?
Well, no, I had changed my mind by Friday. By the Friday, then I was starting... I was a bit surprised that there was someone I interviewed at work who was also going there, and I was thinking, I thought this was like a 20-person affair kind of thing. Like, And then I thought, man, maybe I won't go. And I was actually an hour and a half late for my... No, an hour late for my lift, who was due to come by my house. And they were an hour and a half late, so... then I ended up having to still go. And I got there, and... it was an enormous Christian convention. It was 3,000 people there, and it was KYC up at Katoomba. And the theme was eternity. And the thing that struck me straight away is that all these people were really already excited about going to heaven, and I'd never really thought about it as something that, yeah, that you get that excited about. I thought you kind of deal with that when the time comes. And I think because, yeah, in my job, then I kind of was talking people round. Then I thought, I'll just talk God round, and, you know, I'll sort that out when that happens, kind of thing. Whereas they were living in eternity now, with this sense of continuum that this was where they were going. And, really, just over that weekend, then I heard who Jesus was in a way that obviously I'd never heard before. So I'd heard that he wasn't just a man, that he was God. And I heard that he wasn't just a teacher. I heard that his purpose was to come and bring salvation to us. And then I'd always known that his death was like a terrible miscarriage of justice, but it was always completely irrelevant as far as I was concerned. And there are many other people who had died, you know, unjust deaths and things. But then at this conference, I heard that it was personal, that he had died for my sin, and that, yeah, that we were therefore, the purpose of this visit. I think really at that time I was really heartbroken by the lengths that God had gone to bring us back into relationship with him. And which is also very English, I walked up to the front, which...
Not very English.
Not very English, yes. Sorry, yeah. Walked up to the front. And it was one of those, I can't do it. I can't bring myself to walk up the front, but I can't feel any worse than I already do. Because, you know, just recognizing that, you know, that my sin was the reason that Jesus had to, you know, die. And... yeah, and so that was kind of it, how when it happens. And God had actually provided a Christian... I didn't know that my secretary was a Christian, but when I went back to work the next day in the Monday, she had, what do you do at the weekend? And I told her, and she was very excited. And she sat directly opposite me and was able to answer a lot of ignorant questions over the next year or so. And so that was the beginning of the journey. And then a year and a half after I became a Christian, I was at Bible college, so... I was struggling to explain the gospel to every person because I didn't know really any Christians. So everyone in my whole world was, as far as I was concerned, was met possibly in the same situation that I was beforehand, as in assuming that they knew who Jesus was and they didn't. And so I was just saying, look, do you know who he is? Because this is what the Bible says, and I didn't know this, and you might know it, and it's really important that you get clear on this. And after a year, then I realized that maybe I should get some training or some help. And I'd never heard of tracts, you know, those little...
Tractata, yeah.
Those little gospel outline things. So I reckon if I had seen those, then I would not have enrolled to go to Bible college. It was, I was at 6 months of Bible college before I saw one. I thought, that's fantastic. Where did you get hold of that? And I had signed up to do the three-year degree course at that point at SNBC and met Mike a year later.
Sydney Missionary and Bible College, where Mimi went.
Yes.
She's not here.
She just walked in and out.
She walked in and out again. Yeah. Yeah. Were you there at the same time?
No. But I've heard of her.
Everyone has. In Australia. Mike, then, very different story, I seem to remember. Growth into the faith rather than a coming to faith, or what?
Well, kind of. So I grew up in a Christian family. My parents were missionaries with CMS, so the same outfit that some people here are with, including ourselves. And Dad was a medical missionary in Hong Kong. And so I grew up for the first 10 years of my life in Hong Kong. But I wasn't a Christian, so that was a wonderful experience, but I wasn't a Christian. I obviously went to church and was very involved with everything that happened there.
You taught Sunday school.
That was a bit later, but I did. I ended up teaching Sunday school.
But all the time you knew, you definitely weren't.
No. I would have said probably. I wouldn't have thought about it too much. I was very good.
It was just part of life.
We used to do sword drills, you know. So who can find? Do you know the sword drills? Yeah, who can find Ezra chapter 3 verse 2, and you'd all stand there with your Bible ready. He said, go! And the first one would win whatever the sticker or whatever. I was very good at that.
Yeah.
So I knew where the books of the Bible all fitted together, and I could help you if you want with that. I've got some good little song, actually. It might be helpful later on. But there was never any sense of, yeah, and Dad and Mum read the Bible with me, and they prayed, but I don't think I had any kind of relationship with God in hindsight. And so they kept on dragging me to different things. We came back to Australia. They'd take me to camps, to beach missions and things. You know, beach missions? In Australia, we in summers go up to the coast and run activities for the kids to try and get people to come and hear about the gospel. And yeah, they dragged me along with the hope that I'd kind of catch it somehow. But I was pretty resistant. I didn't want to meet with the people. I didn't want to sit with the team. I wouldn't wear the stupid badge, and I wouldn't go to the program. I basically would swim, sit in the tent, listen to the cricket, and not talk to anybody. That was my beach mission experience. Until one of the team members who was talking to my sister just said, "What's going on with Mike? Like, this is a bit strange." I was about 16, and she said, "Oh, we don't know. We don't know who he is. We don't know anything. We really, he's..."
Your sister said that?
My sister, yeah.
Felt that she didn't really know you?
No, because I just wouldn't... Oh, it's just a bit nasty. And so he took me aside and he said, "Come on, mate, we'll go for a walk." And so he was big and strong, so... and he bought me a can of Coke and a licorice stick.
Now, I see Rudy struggling to hear, so turn around the back.
Okay,
and speak slowly and clearly. Yeah.
So he bought me a can of Coke and licorice, and I thought, oh, I'll listen to this bloke. That's pretty nice. And he took me just on a walk, and he said, "You know, you seem to know a lot of things about God. You seem to know your Bible. But do you know that you're scum?"
What's scum in German?
Yeah, what is scum?
It's not polite. Schaum. Abschaum.
That thin, crusty layer on the surface of water. Yeah, okay. And that's fairly direct and blunt.
Not very English.
Not very English, again. But it was actually exactly what I needed to hear, because I wasn't some good person that, you know, isn't it great that Jesus has got me on the team? Here I am in Sunday school. I was a nasty, self-centered little creep, basically, and I was a hypocrite. I had this kind of, on the surface, people would think of me, "Oh yes, he's kind of a pious or whatever kind of guy." But inside, I had nothing to do with God. I wasn't interested in God, and that was the first moment that I really understood that who I was, and the fact that despite who I was, Jesus actually really loved me. And that he had, it wasn't just an undeserved, a deserved love because I was a decent guy or whatever. Despite who I was, he loved me. And he died on the cross for me. And I remember, it's not very good as a 16-year-old crying, especially a 16-year-old Australian. But I remember crying and thinking, this is wonderful. And I still...
So one conversation just turned
out. Yeah, it did. Now, it didn't sort of... And then I didn't come back and I had a halo and I looked all different and all the rest. But, I'd say that's when it switched on for me. And then gradually over time, I think, yeah, God has been working since then. Yeah.
Mm. I think at that time, your dad said you became a lot more pleasant to live with.
Yeah.
So something did change.
Yeah. But my dad's nice.
Then what happened? Give us a summary since then, sort of.
Yeah. Okay. So then, not very much happened. I was in school. I started for the first time going to the Christian group at the school. Before then, I'd had a good Christian friend who'd been kind of encouraging me to come for the last 4 years, and I've never made it. So I started finally going to that. We weren't at a good church in terms of there was nothing for the kids. There were nothing for people my age. So I kind of really floated a bit until I finished school and went to university. And still, in a worldly sense, I reckon I was up for grabs. So as a Christian, now obviously I know God had me from before the beginning of time, but as it looked to me, I reckon I started university and I was still thinking, hey, well, let's have a bit of fun here kind of thing. And again, Beach Mission was very important because my friends from Beach Mission collaborated between themselves and actually organised to line up the Bible study leader so that as soon as I arrived at university, they got us together for a cup of coffee and basically strong-armed me into this group. And so all of a sudden I was in the Christian group at university. I didn't really think that I'd chosen anything, but it had happened. And really, this was an unusual student group. This is a man who on campus was actually teaching the Bible weekly to 600 students. So just a normal secular university. And in Sydney, this man had just built up this ministry and he was just teaching the Bible faithfully at lunchtimes. And having been forced to get in there in the first place, every week I was there, and over 4 years, that was a wonderful blessing. And we then would have conferences where we'd go away for a week as well as students and just engage in the Bible and hear what God was saying through His Word. And really those things were very formative because for the first time it wasn't just that I knew Jesus as my Lord and Saviour. I really had started to get an understanding of who He was, what His heart for the world was, what's important in life, all of these kinds of things. So that by the end of uni, I'd say, yeah, I kind of knew what I needed to be thinking about doing. So since then, what became clear was that, you know, there's nothing and no one more important than Jesus. And there's no greater need in the world than for people to know Jesus. And whatever I had as my plans before that, I think I was a musician and I had the plans of being either a rock star or a diplomat. You can see the two. My link was because a diplomat tends to have a grand piano in each embassy around the world. So I thought, yeah, that could be nice too. You know, stupid worldly plans, and I guess I realised that that's not that who cares about that stuff? I wanted to be involved in kingdom work from there.
So you went and trained and went into full-time ministry?
Yep.
And what was the first full-time ministry post that you had?
So I worked in... So the guy that was running this ministry when I was at university ended up working at St Andrew's Cathedral, and I ended up working for him several years later. St Andrew's is our Sydney Cathedral. And so my job was pastoring a younger congregation. So we'd have about 50 or 60 people aged 18 to 30 kind of thing. And then also part-time I started up a group with the music students at the conservatorium. So the conservatorium is where in Sydney all of the top musicians train and go through and who want to be professionals. And so I started a Christian group among those guys as well. That's what I was doing.
At what point did... let's put it that way, other way around. At what point did Mike cross paths with you?
So I think at the end of my first year
at
SNBC. Mm. Yeah, so he'd noticed me before, but I can't remember anything.
She hadn't noticed me.
probably, I think, so for me, the first year at SNBC was quite helpful in ridding myself of the missionary shame stigma that you grow up with in England, because I think I had always grown up with the sense that if you're a missionary, then there's this sense of apology that was required every time you went anywhere, and you know, you mustn't impose your faith on others, and it has a whole load of colonial baggage. And the good thing about SNBC is every week you get to meet three missionary families, and you just realise what an enormous privilege it is to serve God full time in any part of the world, and you'd hear about what God was doing in those places. So by the time at the end of my first year, then I wanted to be a single missionary in the Middle East, and Mike was already heading, wanted to do mission work as well. He'd done a year in Tanzania, and so yeah, when we met at the end of our first years, then kind of both on that same full-time mission, full-time ministry mission kind of track. Does that make sense?
But you were at different colleges, or the same college?
No, different colleges. Yeah, so we met at another Katoom convention.
And so he persuaded you not to go as a single missionary to the Middle East.
Well, yeah, I remember him saying, oh, you know, it would be nice if we could do it together. And I was thinking, really?
Caroline actually thought I was discipling her.
I'd never dated a Christian before, and it was confusing.
She wasn't aware she was dating her most of the time.
Because Mike, in his, he needed to be theologically rigorous, so it was always turn up for another rigorous session of theological questioning. So it wasn't very romantic, really.
Oh. I did the best I
And from my side of things, I wanted to make sure that he really was a Christian, because there's people who go through life in Christian families and then go through Bible college, and it's just a convenient career track that's, you know, handed down from family to family. And so I needed to make sure that he actually was a Christian, that the things that grieved him were the things that grieved God, and the things that he was excited about were the things that God was delighted in. And so, yeah, I think Mike was also a bit surprised that I was a bit suspicious he might not be a Christian.
So you both tested each other out for quite a while and just about gave each other the benefit of the doubt. How long did it take before you got married?
A year, from meeting to marrying.
Oh, that's not bad.
Not bad.
And so what's... and then you got married and had four kids, and it's all been plain sailing since?
Oh, yeah, piece of cake.
Yeah. any lows and highs you want to tell us about? Or do you want to have a consult about what you're willing to share?
Yeah, sure. I found marriage has been a great blessing, but I think I made a lot of mistakes in the early years of my marriage. So I got married and I was already in theological education and heading into ministry, and of course this is all very important. And I think that somehow along the line, doing this very important thing meant that there was an assumption that Caroline should just get alongside me and off we go kind of thing. And I think that I don't think I was listening very well. I this might be a problem for some other men in this room. Perhaps is this a problem? I have not been a very good listener in the past, and actually learning to tune in and hear what my wife actually was saying and was thinking about different things was something I think that took me maybe 7 years of marriage. I'm certainly not there now, but I think something that I think since I've worked that out, and we've kind of worked out that's something that needs to change, I think that's been a great blessing. In our marriage. Do you want to say anything?
Yeah, I think that's true, and particularly when Mike was doing the PhD, he did a PhD on the Book of Hebrews, and that's very, very intense. And, you know, there was you kind of wrote up the whole thing in the final year of the PhD, really, and so it was a very intense time, and we were preparing to move to Melbourne, and that's what I was doing. And so I think that was quite a stressful time. Mm. When you came and visited, it was quite stressful.
It was hugely stressful. Yeah. We were delighted to see you. It was great to see you.
Yeah, like we weren't sure if the PhD was going to get finished or not. And I was full pelt organising moving to Melbourne, and Mike was full pelt trying to get the PhD finished. It was quite a busy time. But it's been good. It has been good.
How come you ended up in Munich then?
Mm. Yeah.
A missionary to the first world.
Yeah, good question. So when I finished uni and was convicted that there was nothing more important than Jesus to serve, I still didn't really want to do ministry. I could see that it was the most important thing, but I didn't want to do it. And I actually spent a year then in Tanzania, kind of doing a Jonah thing in one sense, perhaps running as far away as I could, but also thinking, no, I need to see whether maybe I can serve God in a place where I don't know anybody and see how I go. And that was again a very helpful year, because it made me realize again that the teaching that I'd heard, the blessings of hearing good teaching, are wonderful blessings, and the church needs to hear good teaching, and the world needs to hear teaching about Jesus. And
so what was it about that year that made that clippy sort of?
Well, just seeing again in Tanzania how God is at work, and yet there's such a great need for good, solid, biblical teaching. And so, yeah, I forgot what the question was, to be honest.
How did you get to Munich?
How did we get to Munich? Oh, yes, okay. So I came back thinking very much, well, I want to be involved in going somewhere outside of Sydney and just trying to help help the church wherever I can, wherever I end up in the world, being involved in training up local Christian leaders who can teach the Bible, who can actually then take the word and proclaim it, because they'll do that much better than I can in another context. And that was pretty much our plan all the way through since, well, even before we got together.
Before we met the Vices.
Yeah. Yep. And then, we decided we'd make the decision about where we'd end up.
Okay, so you said you definitely wanted to be in ministry, theological education,
training up
somewhere people, overseas.
Somewhere overseas. We needed to get theological education, so myself being trained, a bit of pastoral experience, and then a PhD, because then that seems to open doors in some places. So they were kind of the steps towards it. But then do you want to keep going with the story from there? So then in about 4 years ago, the Vices entered the Vices.
So the Vices came to our church in Carlingford in Sydney. And I remember saying to Micah, I really hope that we end up in Ethiopia. And Micah was saying, oh, you can do the easy thing and go to Ethiopia if you want. But the harder thing is coming to Germany, and working in Germany. And thinking, oh, okay. I'm not really quite knowing what she meant. But that was actually backed up when we were exploring options. Then we did look at Ethiopia, and there was a position which was possibly available. But they have had funding and wonderful ministry there for a long time. And they said, we've actually got two Ethiopian New Testament PhD students coming through now, and we'd rather give the position to one of those two. In which case you think, yeah, you really don't need us. Like, we'll back right off. Whereas this position in Munich, Matthias really couldn't find anyone.
So now you have to explain to us why you think Germany, a land full of PhDs, does need a PhD from outside.
Well, I don't think it needs a PhD so much. It needs, it's got plenty of PhDs. Germany has got quite a few double PhDs. Just to give you a context of Bavaria, we have is a state, 12.3 million people or whatever. There isn't a Bible training centre alternative in the whole state. So that there's nothing that you can actually go and be equipped to teach the Bible in Bavaria. Now, I think that's remarkable. I think that's astounding. In Sydney, there are plenty of Bible colleges. And so we basically were convicted because we got in touch with, through Jude Hickel and through Klaus Hickel, who are here, who sent our details to a man called Matthias Lohmann, who is the pastor in Munich at the FEG church there. And they didn't know that we were looking, we weren't really thinking of Germany at that stage. They didn't know we were thinking, but the week before, Matthias had been approached by the head of the Martin Bucer seminar, which is trying to now start these small Bible centres around Germany, to see whether they could start something in Munich. And he was like...
And just a footnote, Bucer Seminar has a centre in Chemnitz, very close to here, Studienzentrum, where Manfred studied and has been doing his MA. So if you know Manfred Stettler, used to be at LEC, there's a connection there. Yeah,
and so instantly he's thinking, but this is what we need. We don't have anywhere where we can raise up the next generation of gospel workers here. But who can do it? Suddenly our email arrives and we got talking, and we were just thinking...
So it was just God's timing.
God's timing.
Just the right time.
And we were thinking, on the other hand, we didn't want to just go somewhere where there was no one and that we had any contact with, and we just kind of plonked down, because the needs of the world are massive. We wanted to go somewhere where there was a good local doing good things who we could get along and say, how can we help? What can we do? How can we be useful? And, with Matthias we found that... A situation which is a massive, massive context of need, which again, in Australia, that's bizarre, the land of Luther, and yet Bavaria is needy, give me a break, but it's 1 year in, it's Yeah, it's a pretty wintry, spiritually wintry place, actually. And yet, here's Matthias faithfully preaching the word. And we now have six students. We've only been going since November last year. We now have six students already, young men, who are saying, we want to learn how to preach the word. We want to be preachers in the future. And then we have other people who turn up to our Saturday seminars who are also interested in different ministries around the place. One guy is a passion for prison ministry, just different things around the place. So it's an exciting opportunity, we look forward to seeing what the Lord does. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Just briefly, how's it been as a family the first year? 1 year?
One year, a bit. Yeah, look, I think it's been good. Like, I think as a mother, the hardest thing's been watching the kids struggle, particularly our two eldest ones, one's 8 and one's 10. And school is quite different here. There's quite a lot of pressure, particularly on our eldest.
So they've gone into the normal German school from nothing.
Yeah, yeah. So that's been the hardest thing from my perspective. And just feeling completely useless because I can't help them with their homework.
You can't even read the notes. The notes come home from school and they take like 45 minutes to translate.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, we've just been massively, once more aware that we're completely dependent on God for for the provision and care of our children. But he really has provided for them wonderfully. And
did you tell us what you came out in your prayer thing yesterday?
Just that Tom's been accepted into a gymnasium, and everybody, from arriving, said that won't happen. He can't catch up. The first contact I ever had with his primary teacher, I didn't even say hello, but she said, what you're doing to Thomas is wrong. You could be ruining his life. He won't catch up.
You must send him to an English school.
You must send him to an international school. And it was so direct. It completely threw me. And then I thought, well, maybe that's just because she's not a Christian, maybe. And, but then at church, the mums were saying the same thing. We're kind of thinking, well, God will put Tom wherever he puts Tom. And, that will be the right place, ultimately. And so, and yet... Yeah, at this point it's quite extraordinary, really, but when we think about it.
That's great. That's just an answer to prayer come through this week, which is great to hear. I think you wanted to give us a foretaste of the talks.
Oh, no, that's okay. No, I'll be saying up tomorrow.
You're saying up tomorrow, okay.
Yep.
But to encourage us to read the book of Haggai, if you get a chance. Mm.
Yes, Caroline's pointing out that I'm going to be referring to it as Haggai, not Haggai-I. If that's all right.
Haggai.
Yeah. I can adapt if you want. Just Haggai. Can you say
shouldn't
your
it go up at the end? Haggai?
Yeah, okay.
Haggai! Okay. Haggai? Yeah,
great. I've got the night to practice.
Good. We're supposed to go into... Thanks very much for opening up to us and so on. Do lots of things there that I think you may want to follow up and talk more about and say, I'd love to hear more about X, Y or Z from their lives. Do talk to them. I make the most of having them here.